Paranormal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Tales of Al, The Water Rescue Dog, The Making of a Super Athlete by Lynn Cox, and I'll be reading some articles and newsletters from magazines about animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Tales of Al by Lynn Cox. In the last chapter, we learned that Lynn was explaining how she trained a very scared little boy to feel safe in the water. She used a gentle technique and invited the boy's dogs to swim along with him while he was learning how to swim. Chapter 19, Basset Hounds and Puccini. We took a break from talking and eating for the moment, and I noticed music coming from speakers positioned around the patio. "Is that Puccini?" I asked. Roberto nodded and smiled. "The owner of the Trattoria loves music and dogs. This is from La Boheme. It's the cafe scene where Musetta, one of the main characters in the opera, is singing with her dog." A man in a stylish black suit and blue silk tie, the owner of the restaurant, came outside to check on us. He wanted to make sure that we were enjoying everything. We assured him that we were. I asked him about the Puccini opera. He said it was a big deal for dogs to be in La Boheme. They auditioned for the role. There were all types of terriers, Pomeranians, Tibetan spaniels, French bulldogs, and many other breeds, and that they all played the role of Musetta's dog. It was an enormous honor to get the part. The dog had to have something special, an ability to both play the role and to connect with the audience. We enjoyed listening to the opera for a few minutes, and then I told them about Sarah and the Basset Hounds. When I first gave Sarah a swimming lesson, her grandmother, Emily, met me at the pool gate, unlocked it, and invited me into the pool area. She apologized for two howling Basset Hounds, and she introduced me to 7-year-old Sarah, who was standing slightly behind her wearing a light pink swimsuit. Her long blonde hair was pulled back into a ponytail. She was speaking at a hyperspeed, breathing rapidly, telling me that she was ready to get into the pool. But her hands were shaking. Her grandmother left us so I could work with Sarah. She told her grandmother she would be okay. We stepped into the warm pool, but Sarah's teeth were chattering. Something was wrong. I asked her if she was cold. She said no, and her blue eyes filled with tears. She blinked them back. Stuttering, she said that she was not cold. Something had happened that made her so afraid. I needed to find out what it was. "Let's climb out of the pool and let's talk," I suggested. "I'm okay," Sarah protested. She thought I was upset with her. "Let's talk for a few moments," I said in a soothing voice. We sat on the pool's edge and she inhaled sharply. "Did something bad happen to you when you were in the water?" I asked. She shook her head and winced. "No, something happened to our Basset Hounds. They almost died." In a soft voice, she recounted the story. Her grandparents had two Basset Hounds, Winnie and Pooh. Winnie was 7 years old, like Sarah, and Pooh was 5 years old. Their fur was short, and they got cold easily. They liked to sun themselves on the pool deck, especially during the cool California winters. Rolling on their backs, they let the sun warm their chests and bellies. Even though they looked like they were sleeping, they were awake and listening to the sounds around the house. When they heard dogs, cats, coyotes, and squirrels beyond the yard, they ran to the fence, squeezed their noses under it, and barked. Their loud, deep-throated howls carried throughout the neighborhood. One morning when Sarah was visiting her grandparents, Winnie was sunbathing by the pool. Sarah was helping her grandfather Joseph trim an orange tree in the backyard while grandmother was inside. Winnie heard something and jumped to his feet. He alerted Pooh and they raced across the pool deck, but Winnie cut the corner too close and splashed into the water. Winnie did not know how to swim. His owners had tried to teach him, but his legs were very short and his bones extremely heavy. He could not float. He sank to the bottom of the pool. Sarah saw it happen. She saw him looking up at her with his sad eyes. There was nothing she could do. She did not know how to swim. Joseph dropped the trimmer and jumped into the pool fully clothed, but he dove under the water and tried to grab and lift Winnie, but the dog was too heavy. Joseph had to return to the surface, take a deep breath, and try again. He managed to pull Winnie to the shallow end, but the dog seemed lifeless. Joseph shouted for Sarah to get her grandmother. Sarah ran into the house yelling for her grandmother. She finally found her in the garage. Emily ran out to the pool and jumped in fully clothed. She didn't pause to kick off her shoes. Together, Joseph and Emily lifted Winnie out of the water. Water was draining from Winnie's mouth and nose. His eyes were shut. Joseph held the back of his hand up to Winnie's nose to feel for breath and watched Winnie's chest to see if it was rising and falling. He could not feel Winnie's breath. He opened Winnie's mouth, pulled his tongue forward, and let more water drain from his mouth. Once the water stopped flowing, Joseph gave Winnie mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. He placed his hand over the dog's muzzle to make sure it was completely closed. He put his mouth over Winnie's nostrils, blew gently, and watched for his chest to lift and expand. It rose. He removed his mouth from Winnie's nose and muzzle and allowed the air to flow out. Sarah could not remember how many times Joseph repeated the maneuver, but finally Winnie started to breathe on his own. Winnie opened his eyes, but he looked awful. Sarah's grandparents were afraid he would have developed pneumonia or water intoxication from inhaling and ingesting too much water, so they drove him to the veterinarian. The vet examined Winnie and said he was lucky to be alive and that Sarah's grandparents were wise to have given him artificial resuscitation. Winnie survived because of his quick actions. The veterinarian prescribed antibiotics to prevent a bacterial infection. Winnie was not himself for a couple of weeks, but he did recover. Sarah's grandparents never expected an accident would happen again, but a few months later, Winnie and Pooh were chasing a squirrel around the backyard, and Pooh fell into the pool, just like Winnie had before. He immediately sank to the bottom. Sarah found him and called for her grandparents. They jumped into the water and pulled Pooh out of the pool. The dog wasn't breathing. Joseph ran his hands along the side of Pooh's hind leg, where it met his body, and pressed down gently with his fingers to feel for a pulse. Pooh was underwater longer than Winnie had been, and Joseph was worried his heart might have stopped. He thought he might have to perform CPR on Pooh, but he was able to feel Pooh's pulse and gave Pooh artificial resuscitation. Sarah said this happened when she was 5 years old, and it scared her to see Winnie and Pooh nearly drown. Because of this, she was afraid of the water. I said she was brave to take swimming lessons. Because of her quick response, her sweet basset hound survived. She was able to help when it was most needed. For the first time, Sarah realized she had made a great difference in saving Winnie and Pooh from drowning. The dogs had also been a part of her life. They were her best friends. She told me she had nightmares that the dogs fell in the pool again, and there was no one there to save them. In my experience, sometimes the best way to overcome fear is to help someone who is afraid. The best way to make sure Winnie and Pooh were safe around the pool was to teach them to swim and not let them in the pool area unless there was someone watching. I asked Sarah if she could help me teach Winnie and Pooh to swim. She agreed to help me. My concern, though, was if Winnie and Pooh were afraid they would bite, as dogs sometimes become aggressive when they're frightened. Sarah's grandmother said Winnie and Pooh had never bitten anyone. Even when Sarah was a toddler and she was bumping them when they were sleeping and startled them, they never snapped. Sometimes when they were sleeping, Sarah rested her head on one of them and they slept beside her. They loved having her close. Still, I could not be sure that we could do this safely. I decided that I would hold the dogs' chests up and keep their heads above the water and have Sarah stand behind me and hold their tails. Before we had a dog climb into the water with us, I would show Sarah the new skills we wanted to teach them, such as pulling and kicking. Winnie looked like he was in shock when Sarah's grandmother handed him to me in the pool. It seemed like he could not believe that we were putting him in the water. It felt like he tightened every muscle in his body, and in that state he would sink. I spoke to him calmly, hoping that he would relax, and I told Sarah how to move her hand and arms in the water so she could demonstrate the doggy paddle for him. I moved his paws in the same paddling motion. He was frozen with fear. When it was his turn, Pooh reacted the same way, but Sarah and I continued working with them. Winnie and Pooh learned to swim, but their bodies were so heavy they could only stay up for about 10 seconds. That wasn't long enough for them to survive, so the grandparents got them life jackets and would not let the dogs in the pool area unless they were wearing them and supervised. Sarah learned to swim all 4 strokes, and she liked the water. She grew up to be tall and graceful and flexible and exceedingly coordinated. She became a dancer, and whenever she faced a challenge in dancing or in her life in general, she remembered how she decided to be brave and master something she was afraid of. She was proud that she helped Winnie and Pooh learn to swim. Ferruccio and Roberto were not surprised. They said some dogs do not float well in the water because of their body types, and they fight the water to keep their heads up. It is the same for people who are lean, who feel like they cannot float and struggle in the water. They can float, but they float at a lower level than someone with more body fat. I told Ferruccio and Roberto and Donatella that I heard that there were other dog breeds that were not designed for swimming. A friend's bulldog fell in the backyard pool, and before he could be saved, he sank to the bottom and drowned. It was heartbreaking. Dogs swim in circles when they are disoriented, Donatella said. She saw this happen with dogs that they trained at the school. When they were in the lakes and in the sea, they knew where to go and how to get in and out of the water. They could see the shore, but when they were invited to train in a local swimming pool, they became confused. From their perspective, everything in the pool was flat. Everything looked the same. They did not have any landmarks to see where to climb out. They became disoriented and swam erratically in the circle. If they choked on water, they started to panic, but they were wearing swim vests, and that helped them to not sink. Their owners guided them to the pool steps so that they could learn to climb out. Some dogs managed to use the steps, while other dogs never learned. This helped me understand what happened to our family dogs. We had three Italian greyhounds. They were delicate dogs, lean and streamlined like toy greyhounds. The breed was known as the lap dog of royalty. Frederick the Great, Anne of Denmark, Queen Victoria, and King James I had Italian greyhounds. Catherine the Great, Empress of Russia, also loved the breed. Her favorite was Zemaira, a delicate gray name for an opera character. The breed was popular around the globe. We named the mother Gazelle because she looked like that beautiful animal, and her puppies were named Mighty Mouse because she lifted and carried items that looked like they were twice her weight, and Bruno because he was tall and handsome. Roberto and Ferruccio smiled when they heard the names. They thought they fit the dogs a lot better than Pork and Beans. They were much different from poodles, beagles, and other dogs we had had when I was young. The Italian greyhounds were elegant sight hounds with long, graceful lines and curved backs. They were playful, affectionate, and incredibly swift on land, but they were terrible swimmers. Like Winnie and Pooh, Bruno, Mighty Mouse, and Gazelle loved to race around the backyard pool and circle it as if they were on a racetrack. Sometimes they tumbled into the water, and they were extremely negatively buoyant. For a few moments, they could frenetically dog paddle and keep their heads above the water, but their long, thin legs and small paws were ineffective. The weight of their muscular bodies made them sink. Sometimes they reached the side of the pool and clung to it, but they could only hold on for a few seconds. Because my parents were so safety-oriented, they always watched the pool when children and dogs were in the backyard. They never left any of us unsupervised. But I have an adult friend who had a German Shepherd. She went to work one morning. When she returned home at the end of the day, she discovered her German Shepherd had drowned in her pool. Another friend lost her pug in the pool. Roberto said that the people who had dogs with stubby legs and long bodies like dachshunds, corgis, and dandy Dinmont terriers had to be particularly careful with their dogs around the water because they were not good swimmers. Roberto said they were special swim vests designed for dogs to help them keep their heads above water. The vests were used at the school to help the dogs float and stay high in the water so that they could rescue people. Owners could have their dogs wear the swim vests if they had a pool or if they were doing water sports and they wanted to take their dog with them. People still need to watch their dog just like they must watch a child or an adult when near or in the water. Making sure people and dogs were safe in and around water was Ferruccio's life work. Every adventure, every training exercise, every trip, every rescue stays in my heart, Ferruccio said, and smiled slowly, realizing the key to why he loved doing it so much. And he did it with this, his best friend, Roberto and Donatella, who had been one at the core of the Scuola Italian Cani Salvataggio for almost as many years as he had. Roberto told me that during the summer months, certified water rescue dogs and their owners are stationed at 48 beaches and lakes in Italy. They patrol with Guardia Costiera. They have prevented hundreds of drownings. There are about 300 certified water rescue dogs in Italy. Ferruccio said he had also taught dogs in Germany and Switzerland to become water rescue dogs. Roberto told me that in the morning, Al and Donatella were joining the Guardia Costiera, and they invited me to sail with them. I glanced at Donatella and realized why she looked so tense and was so quiet during dinner. Al was having a test in the morning with the Guardia Costiera crew. For years, Donatella had worked with Al to prepare him for this. It would be more than just disappointing if she failed. She had always been a different dog and a big challenge. Donatella was worried her Newfoundland would fail the test. She left for a moment to make a call. I turned to Ferruccio and said, "I know Donatella is worried. Do you think it would be better if I decline the invitation to join her for the test tomorrow? I really want to go, but I do not want to be a distraction to Al." "No, she wants you to see how we train the Guardia Costiera. Al needs to be able to perform in any situation," Ferruccio said. It had been a long, perfect day, filled with new adventures and new friends with and without fur, and a delicious meal. I could not wait for the morning, but I also worried. I didn't know what I had done to distract Al. Whatever it was, I didn't want to repeat it and cause her to fail her test. That would be a disaster. And that's the end of chapter 19. Next week, we'll read Tales of Al, the water rescue dog, the maker of a super athlete. Lynn Cox is the author. Next week's chapter is called Pesto and Doge's Palace. Our next article is by Nicola Davis, and it says, cat owners are asked to share pets' quirks for a genetic study. Cat owners are being asked to share their pets' quirky traits and even post researchers about their fur in an effort to shed light on how cats' health and behavior is influenced by their genetics. The scientists behind the project, Darwin's Cats, are hoping to enroll 100,000 felines from pedigrees to mogies with the DNA of 5,000 cats expected to be sequenced in the next year. The team says the goal is to produce the world's largest feline genetic database. Unlike most existing databases, which tend to focus on specific breeds or veterinary applications, Darwin's Cats is building a diverse, large-scale data set that includes pet cats, strays, and mixed breeds from all walks of life, said Dr. Eleanor Carlson, the chief scientist at the U.S. nonprofit organization Darwin's Ark. And that's where she is the director of the Vertebrate Genomics Group at the Broad Institute of MIT and Harvard, and an associate professor at UMass Chan Medical School. It is important to note that this is an open database project, so we will share the data with other scientists as the data grows. The project follows on the heels of Darwin's Dogs, a similar endeavor that shed light on aspects of canine behavior, disease, and genetic origins of modern breeds. Darwin's Cats was launched in mid-2024 and already has more than 3,000 cats enrolled, although not all have submitted their fur samples. Participants from all over the world are asked to complete a number of free surveys about their pets' physical traits, behavior, environment, and health. However, at present, DNA kits for owners to submit fur samples can be sent only to U.S. residents, and a donation of $150 for one cat is requested to cover the cost of sequencing and help fund the research. Carlson added that the team has developed a method to obtain high-quality DNA from loose fur without needing its roots, meaning samples can simply be collected by brushing. The researchers hope that by combing insights from cats' DNA with the survey results, they can shed light on how feline genetics influence what cats look like, how they act, and the diseases that they experience. Understanding the genetics behind personality traits could even shed light on human neurodevelopmental conditions. The team also hopes to learn about the genetic diversity of different breeds and unpick the ancestry of modern cats. "I'm really curious to find out how common this trait is in different parts of the world. I hope one day we might be able to combine that information with genetics to trace this trait back to its origin." A spokesperson for the charity International Cat Care, which is not involved in the work, said, "We're really interested in the collaborative approach of Darwin's Ark, particularly in encouraging pet owners as community scientists to help advance the collective scientific understanding of cats as a species. Dr. Jeffrey Schoenbeck of the Roslin Institute at the University of Edinburgh also welcomed the scheme. This is an important project that has the potential to improve our understanding of companion animals, the diseases that cause their morbidity, and the very nature of feline domestication. This article by Nicola Davis, Cat Owners Asked to Share Pets' Quirks for Genetic Study. Our next reading comes from Best Friends, the March-April 2025 edition. It's the magazine for the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary. This article, Home Again, New Challenge Encourages Getting More Lost Dogs Home. Sometimes a bit of encouragement is all you need to try something new. That's the idea behind the challenges that encourage Best Friends Network partners to try different ways of doing things with all the goals of saving more lives. Recently, our partners were invited to join a month-long Return to Home Challenge, which focused on getting more lost dogs back to their homes. To participate, organizations agreed to try tactics from a list of proven ways to get lost dogs home and faster. The list included waiving or reducing the fee to reclaim a pet, holding free or low-cost microchipping clinics, ensuring that animal control officers have microchip scanners, hanging flyers in neighborhoods where dogs are picked up, and using nextdoor.com or other local social media to advertise found dogs. Implementing strategies like these mean more lives are saved because lost pets end up in shelters far too often, and that can put their lives at risk. 144 shelters and rescue organizations participated in the challenge, and when it was over, they had collectively returned 487 more lost dogs to their homes compared to the same time period the previous year. Those with the most success received $10,000 grants, and all participating organizations received at least $1,000 in grant funds for a total of $345,000 given to partners to support them in sustaining the new methods they tried during the challenge. The best part is knowing that more dogs separated from their families got home safe and sound, and many others will too. This article, Home Again, New Challenge Encourages Getting More Lost Dogs Home. Diligence saves the day. Keeping legislation for pets strong in two cities. Passing legislation to support dogs and cats can be absolute as a lifesaver. And like anything else, sometimes attention and action are required to keep those good laws and ordinances in place and doing their jobs. Recently, two cities needed just that, and the Best Friends legislative team helped to make it happen. The first was in Nashville, Tennessee, a city that passed a retail pet sales ban in 2018 thanks to the hard work of Best Friends advocacy team member Kathleen Murray, who championed the ordinance when she was on the Nashville City Council. Under the citywide ordinance, stores are not allowed to sell puppies or kittens raised in pet mills, places that churn out baby animals to sell in stores or online. Even with the ordinance in place, though, Petland, one of the most notorious retail stores to sell puppies from mills, planned to open a location there. That spurred a request to review the existing ordinance and update it. Thanks to swift action and strong political relationships, both in the Metro Nashville Health Department and the Metro Nashville Code Department, will enforce restrictions on retail pet stores in all of Davidson County. The second life-saving action was in Aurora, Colorado, where Best Friends and other organizations and local advocates convinced the city council to repeal the dog breed ban in 2021. It was a significant win for dogs and the people who love them, largely because certain dogs would no longer be banned simply for how they look. Shortly after repeal, however, a judge struck down the law on the grounds that because the underlying law was passed by the voters as a ballot initiative, it could only be repealed by the voters. So Best Friends and others got to work quickly, and in November 2024, Aurora voters went to the polls and repealed the breed ban. With the ban lawfully repealed, the city council members quickly adopted a comprehensive breed-neutral, dangerous dog ordinance for the city. Both cases highlight the need for vigilance and advocacy to assure that the voices of taxpayers and constituents are heard and that laws protecting pets and people are enforced. Diligence and advocacy are truly a winning combination. This article, Diligence Saves the Day. These two articles were from Best Friends Magazine, March-April 2025 edition. Their slogan is, Together We Can Save Them All. Well, that completes our readings for today. I do hope you've enjoyed them, and I invite you back again next time for more articles about the animals in our lives and how they impact us. Until then, this is Joyce Vesper for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of an Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.